Good morning and welcome, everybody. I'm Steve Johnson, the director of the Americas program here at CSIS. Really great to see this turnout today. Knew this was going to be a challenging environment when there was no traffic on the roads coming into town. But this is really terrific, and we've got one of the most interesting subjects for a discussion that we've had in a long time, something that not a lot of people really know about, and that is how to advance global collaboration at the local level with state and municipal partnerships facilitated by our federal government. Just a couple of words of how we'll do this this morning. Want to make sure that everybody's got their cell phone either off or on stun mode. And questions and answers, if you would raise your hand, and we'll recognize you, and then if you would please give your name and affiliation, that would be great. Just to kind of get us started as to who we all are around the table, if we could, like to just have everybody introduce themselves real quick so that our guest speaker will know what organizations are represented here today. So if you could start. And if we could start back here and go up to the front. Well, terrific. Great. Thank you. I think most of us know that it runs counter to the Constitution for our states and municipalities to have their own diplomatic relations with foreign countries. But in fact, the network of commercial and social ties is a fairly dense one. You all know about the Sister Cities program. Even our National Guard units participate in something called the State Partnership Program, doing some military training and lending expertise in such areas as disaster preparedness. So it should come as no surprise that Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton decided to leverage this as an extension of her smart power thinking when she created the Office of the Representative for Global Intergovernmental Affairs in 2010. Previously, states supported these efforts in an ad hoc manner with liaison responsibilities spread out among the old USIA, USAID, and geographic bureaus, and creating a focal point in state for governors, mayors, and other local elected officials now has opened up new space for subnational relationships to become another important tool of U.S. foreign policy. Now, the upshot is the establishment of a cooperative network between the U.S. and certain countries to open opportunities for state and local leaders to increase their exports, foreign direct investment, tourism, and other economic activities to support job creation and competitiveness and to lay a strong foundation for expanding economic relationships that have an impact at the local level. Joining us to moderate this morning's discussion, to my far left, is Dan Rundy, who holds the CSIS Schreier Chair on Global Analysis and directs the Project on Prosperity and Development. And to my immediate left is Joanna Mendelson-Foreman, who is a CSIS Senior Associate, Haiti expert, Brazil expert, defense expert, energy expert. Shall I go on?
Too old.
Now a little bit about our distinguished guest. Rita Jo Lewis has been the representative for global intergovernmental affairs since the office's creation. And prior to her appointment, she served as the vice president and counselor to the president of the United States Chamber of Commerce. Ms. Lewis served in the Clinton White House from 1993 to 1995, and as special assistant to the president for political affairs, she was the senior domestic political advisor for the first Summit of the Americas held in Miami, Florida, something that's sort of near and dear to our heart in the Americas program. So please give a warm welcome the Honorable Rita Jo Lewis.
Well, I just want to say one thing. Rita Jo has been very generous with her time, and we know this is a holiday season, so I just personally want to thank everybody for coming out on a dreary, dark Monday morning in December, because the topic is far from either dreary or dark, it's one of the more exciting things that we've done in the U.S. government in the last few years. And not only having Rita here, just a personal note, she and I flew many hours together to see the work in Haiti that has been part of the Obama administration's effort to rebuild. And we really had a trip that said to us, we have to do a program about her office and how they helped enable some of this work. So we're really honored to have you here and take the time off in a busy holiday season. I'm going to turn the first question over to Dan. We're going to do this in a Q&A format. We're going to go for about 20, 25 minutes, and we welcome your comments and questions in the last half hour. But if there's something you urgently have to get in, give us a two-finger, and it's a open market here.
Thanks very much, Joanna, and thank you so much, Special Representative Lewis, for being with us. I want to echo the comments of my colleagues, and I want to thank Joanna for also allowing me to participate in this and be a partner on this. I think this is a very exciting and important part of how we're going to influence the future, both in terms of developing countries, but also how we think about diplomacy and how we engage with the world. Could you talk a little bit? You have an interesting background that you bring to this conversation. Obviously, you bring a political background, a private sector background, but could you talk a little bit about how you fit into this, if you will?
Well, first of all, I want to just say thank you so much to Stephen and Joanna and to Daniel at CSIS to CSIS.
It's okay. It's early.
It's early. To giving us the opportunity to talk about the work that we've been doing. You know, we think at this season, this is just the perfect opportunities for all of what has been accomplished in this first term in this administration to be able to continue to have organizations such as yourselves who have been the leading think tank around issues around the Western Hemisphere to be able to recognize the importance of the work that we're doing. We want to just say on behalf of the State Department, thank you very much. In terms of going to your direct question of how to fitting right in, one of the questions that we're always asked is how has my experiences or background brought us to this global work? And I will tell you that when I was charged by Secretary Clinton with this responsibility, one of the things that she was very, very clear on is that, you know, we're not going to do intergovernmental affairs the old way. We're going to do it the new way. And for you to put your imagination hat on and your innovative hat on and to be as expansive in how we should do this work. And really, it's looking at several ways of how to go about doing this. Well, first, you know, to be able to acknowledge to have my State Department colleagues here, not only from my own office who you met, but also from our Western Hemisphere and our Brazil desk, is really important because one of the things that we knew early on is that all of this work that we had to do had to be very collaborative. And so in my experiences has always been in a very collaborative nature in the sense that when you work with state and local governments, there's so many things that have an impact on the work that you do. But at the end of the day, if you get leaders together, they all say the exact same thing. And so I've been fortunate in my career, over my career, to have worked with state and local officials in a number of capacities, not only inside of the state and local governments, but also as an advisor to them. And one of the issues that came about real early on was that Secretary Clinton said that as a former First Lady, married to a governor, who was the chairman of the National Governors Association, then he was president, so therefore she was First Lady again. Then as a United States Senator, she understood how important it is for first communities that needed to be involved. Communities are also led by political figures. So it was very important when she took efforts and came into the State Department and early on announced that she was going to bring in new pillars of partners for the work that we were going to be doing at the State Department. So, of course, all of you know, which is history, that women and girls was one of the first areas. She then looked at the fact that she wanted to be very innovative and look at how could we use new technologies. She then also wanted to shore up the work that we were doing around public-private partners and basically consolidate, as you said, all of the different efforts and not really do things on an ad hoc basis. And then another one of our pillars was how could we use these, how could we engage state and local leaders in this effort way beyond anything that had been imaginable previously. And so when you really sit back and begin to, when I began to engage with these leaders, one of the things that we did early on was to sit with our, who we consider, and as all people consider, the economic drivers in the communities. That's the governors, the mayors, and the county executives. And to really not only just engage with their association, but engage with them individually. And so when you sit down and talk with a governor, when you talk with a mayor, when you talk with a county executive, the first thing they will tell you is exactly what their interests, where their interest is. And their interest was always about job creation. It was always about the economy. It was always about trade and investment. It was also about how do you better the community of which they govern, of which they lead. It was always about issues around sustainability, inclusiveness, issues around social responsibility. Well, it was no shock when we started to travel and in places like Brazil, and I sat down with the governors and the mayors and the officials there, that those are the exact same issues that they have. So, you know, being able to see the commonalities of interest was also really important in the work that we've done. And so I think that we've had the ability to see that, and that's how we've been able to build our programs.
Well, I think that gives us a good basis to start, but I'm going to be the contrarian here because the lawyer part of me remembers that the Constitution of the United States prohibits states from having foreign policies. You know, Article 1, Section 10, and many other sections, Article 2 of the executive, put the power of dealing with foreign governments into the hands of, you know, the federal officials. And you're talking about states having foreign policies. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about, in the 21st century, how you see these subnational parts of our government engaging in something that traditionally by our founders was considered forbidden even before that. I mean, James Madison in the Federalist Papers talked about states not having it, and our country came together because of this. So I just want to have you get a perspective on what you see are the limits of these activities as well as the opportunities, because we're in a globalized world. We're not in the 18th century.
So. Well, you know, you raise a very good point. And I will tell you, when we began this work, the only caution, and I'm a lawyer also.
I know, and a good
that,
one.
that was told to me is just don't let them do a treaty. Okay?
Well, that's a pretty.
That's pretty broad. That you can engage as far as we can in terms of bringing them to have a seat at the table, but that the jurisdiction and the authority, as you say, rests in the federal government. It is exclusive, it's unified, and it's also centralized. And one of the things that our Constitution says is that that jurisdiction lies in our executive branch, and it lies with the State Department. So Secretary Clinton has always said that our foreign policy, at its core, will be nation to nation. But in 21st century politics, as we 21st century foreign policy, we have to then look at the fact that now anyone at any time can be a diplomat. All they got to do is press send. Because technology allows all of us to be connected. And that's, I think, also at the core of Secretary Clinton's 21st century statecraft. Mm. It is not just about partners and new partners. It really is about how do you bring all of this connectedness that we all have now, that we are tied to, not just here of the people sitting around in this room, but any place, anytime, anywhere in the world. And so with the work that people like Alex Ross and them have done, who have really helped to bring us all into the 21st century, and we throw words around now like about Facebook and Twitter and blogging and LinkedIn and all of this. Now, 3.5 years ago when we first started this, that was just, you know, little points on the website. Now we are aggressive about it because when you have seen traditional leaders always have been engaged in some form or fashion. They've always had, like you said, sister city relationships, sister state. They've always been engaged in state partnership programs. But now these relationships have to be reinvigorated. And the biggest thing that has taken place from this effort is that it has been pushed to the secretarial level and given a priority that in this era of engagement that President Obama talks about, we are all engaged that we to the point that we've got many more actors in our foreign policy. They're not the ones sitting around the table. They're not the ones negotiating the treaty. And I will tell you, they don't want to. That is not who these state and local leaders are. Their prime interest is in the interest of their city, their state, their county, or whatever the legislatures are doing. I have participated in a session at the U.S.-China Forum where I had two governors, and I had Governor Markell from Delaware and Governor McDonald from Virginia. And the CEOs really wanted at some point for them to get in to start talking about issues around IP protection and to really started talking about trade agreements and really moving along the lines of issues, as Joanna said, that is the province of the United States State Department and our foreign policy at the national level, as any government that we engaged in wants to make sure they keep it that way. The two governors totally said to a group of individuals, their agenda is about their state, their people, their citizens. Yes, are they concerned about the climate of a business climate in a community and want it to be open, transparent, fair, accountable? Absolutely. The same way they would have if it was in Virginia or if it was in Delaware. But the most important thing that they were targeting and discussing was about the relationships that and the deep relationships that they are building with the leaders in these state and local communities, whether it's Brazil, whether it's China, whether it's Russia, whether it's India, you name it. And the fact that the State Department at this juncture was prioritizing that and putting resources behind that and really allowing us to engage in that kind of conversation was very, very refreshing for not only for the state and local leaders, but definitely for the private sector.
Just I think, I know you listen to Brazil, Russia, India, and China. You have middle-income countries. We did a report on rethinking our cooperation relationships with middle-income countries, and it's clear that the sorts of challenges that a city like Richmond has in some ways has, you know, there are similar sorts of urban challenges of various kinds with middle-income countries. They're starting to have the same challenges of modernity or do have the same challenges of modernity that we have in the States. Can you talk a little bit about what's different about this sort of engagement, what sort of possibilities it opens up, if you will, in the sense that certainly there's always been, as you said, sister cities and partnerships, but certainly there's been a change in there's an alignment of interests, I think, mm-hmm. as these societies become wealthier, certainly in middle-income countries. But if you could talk a little bit about some example where there's been something that's different than an ambassador to an ambassador or a foreign minister, what sort of a breakthrough or an insight or something that got moved along further because of this sort of connectivity?
You know, I will say one of the biggest breakthroughs is that we early on understood that this initiative or this effort or these partnerships had to be grounded in the mutual interests of all parties. It is not just our way or the highway. It is not just about what one state wants versus another country and, you know, you could care less. It really is about developing partnerships and developing relationships. And so when we would travel to these countries and sit down with these party secretaries and chief ministers and governors, and the leadership talks about mutual trust, mutual friendship, mutual respect, they actually mean that. And sometimes I think that gets lost in the translation, that before these leaders do business with each other, it is not just about I'm going to sell you X and you're going to buy Y and from me and someone else. It really is about having a deeper understanding of understanding each other's economy, each other's community, each other's relationships of how they're going to move things forward. And so what we saw early on, it goes not only the economy is the number one priority. Because if a governor or mayor or county executive or whomever leaves town, when that legislator comes back, I don't care if it's from America or Brazil or China or Russia, they still have responsibilities. And so in those responsibilities, they also want to look at not only the economy, but they all want to look at, we don't have to always say best practice, it can be a good practice. Does America have a good practice, or does that country have a good practice at the state and local level that we want to emulate? So going to your examples of, say, a city or a state of how we have seen some commonalities of interest, I had the fortunate opportunity to travel with Governor O'Malley on my second visit to India. And it was during that time that Governor O'Malley took a one of the largest governor-led delegations to India. He took over 150 people. But when he returned after his meetings, not only in the capital city, because now we're not just in the New Delhis and the Mumbais, we are moving beyond to the second and third and fourth tier cities where all of the dynamic activity is really taking place in these countries. Just like people understand that it's not just about coming to Washington, New York, California, it's like we've got 50 states and plus five territories. And so when he returned, not only had he announced partnerships from an education perspective, because he took the chancellor of the University of Maryland, he took he took the president of the largest community college, Montgomery College, which is one of the premier community colleges in the United States. He also took the president of the largest black college with him, who trains most of the black engineers in America at Morgan State. And then he also took, you know, he reached over into Washington and took some folks from George Washington and John Hopkins. What he did was, because there is an effort between the United States and India to focus on education, he was able to, right then, I'm sure a lot of work had gone in before, but he was able to right then conclude education partnerships with the university that goes way beyond student exchanges. We're talking research, we're talking innovation partnerships, we're talking teacher and exchange. And so that is one example of where I see it. And he also took two of the largest county executives with him. So he had a very, very comprehensive trip. He took his speaker, majority leader of the Maryland House with him, who happened to be of Indian descent. So from a legislature and an education perspective, that's just, you know, one example. And then secondly, not to, you know, just talk about Maryland, but also when I went to Russia, I went to visit Moscow, Ekaterinburg, Vladivostok, and St. Petersburg. And someone said, you know, I went to Vladivostok twice in 6 weeks. So that was, they gave me some points for sincere interest, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I heard it's great in January.
It's great. But the thing that was...
She's going again.
The thing that was so important about that from a specific perspective, when he was the mayor of Baltimore, his wife, who is Judge O'Malley, mm-hmm. started an effort about training judges. Mm-hmm. And when I sat with the new governor of Leningrad and the mayor of team in St. Petersburg and met with the legislature, one of the things they were talking about was those kinds of efforts. And that back then, he carried that along with the judge, not only from when he started as mayor, but also when he became governor. And that's a 20-year relationship. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, teaching Russian judges about the rule of law and transparency and accountability and all types of measures that are we would like to always talk about how we impart American values. I think that's just a good example. But when Governor O'Malley left India, he was able to announce $60 million worth of relationships and partnerships that he had signed while he was there. And we have seen that over this last 3 years been repeated time and time again on the different countries that we focused on.
Well, That is a great record. As a person who lives in Maryland, I'm especially pleased because I know he's going to go to Brazil soon, which is a segue into something we had promoted when you had kindly offered to talk about. And that picture that you've given us up on the screen there, which shows Secretary of State Clinton and Foreign Minister Patriota and all of the team, I see somebody we know standing to the right of that, is really an example that something that you've helped build up in this bilateral relationship, not only in the area of what we talked about, sports and the World Cup and the Olympics, but also programs that many may not know about working on the JPIR program, which is helping the Brazilians deal with an affirmative action agenda, which has become important, and also the one of the earlier issues of the Secretary on an MOU on women's issues. So I'd like to open it up, and Dan probably chime in about how did this relationship evolve? Where do you see it going? It's an important relationship, not only bilaterally, but because of the things we both have to offer as nations. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, first of all, you got to be relentless.
It's true.
The reason being is that we're in a very disciplined, highly structured, organized government that deals with the central core of our being in terms of foreign policy. There can be no error. There can be no mistake. We established early on that working with our bureau team of the Western Hemisphere, so if you take a look at that picture, I think everybody is up there. I am also exceptionally adamant about the fact that you cannot be working in new initiatives, new eras, new pillars, new toolkits, establishing new toolkits, if you don't work with the foundation of the people who do the work every single day. So I have met some of the most exceptional, smartest, brightest, whatever you want to call it, people that I have ever worked with who are foreign policy, foreign affairs officers, and civil servants in the United States State Department. So if you work with their bureau, they have a body of knowledge that goes far beyond anything that one can imagine. After you work with the bureau, you must work with the ambassador. The ambassador has a vision. So in working with Ambassador Tom Shannon, I was very fortunate that 3.5 years ago when I first went to Brazil, to participate as part of the delegation on the World Urban Forum, Ambassador Shannon and I, along with his Consul General, Dennis Hearn at the time of Rio, sat down, and I knew Ambassador Shannon was one of those very innovative ambassadors, and so highly regarded and highly respected. But also I knew one thing that was very critical about Brazil, that if you were going to produce an Olympics and a World Cup, the assistance that was going to be required from not just Brazilians, but from any and every corner of the world was going to be desperately needed. And I saw that when I worked on the Atlanta and the Atlanta Olympics and the Chicago World Cup. So when I went to Brazil 3.5 years ago on my first visit, I went to convince Ambassador Shannon to work with me. Little did I know, in that meeting, he came to convince me to work with him around the Olympics and the World Cup. So we were able to dispense with the niceties and get down to business and say, how can the work that you're doing assist Brazil? Because he knows that so many people, private sector, NGOs, universities, all have their eye on Brazil. We looked and said we needed to be very focused on any of these state and local corporation efforts. And so mutually, the government of Brazil, they're producing the Olympics and the World Cup. There is nothing more important than the legacy that's going to be left around this moment in time. So it is not just about the games and what takes place in the stadium. It is about the legacy of the country. So how is America, so the larger question is, how is America going to assist, provide, mutually support, and benefit from this big mega sporting event activity that's going to take place in a country that few short, you know, years ago, people were saying to me, well, where is Recife? Where is Fortaleza? Where is Natal? And I say, in 560-plus days, people are going to know exactly where all these places are because the spotlight is going to be on those countries. So what we did early on in terms of working with the Bureau, working with the ambassador, and then also understanding what did the federal government, what was their desire, what was their wish, working with Ambassador Vieira here. So meeting with both of our ambassador and their ambassador, and then when we travel, we always start out with the federal government because that's who we are. We represent the federal government. So I'm not going to, we want to seek their counsel, seek their advice, understand what their interests is and interests are. And one of the things that became very, very clear, it was very mutually agreed upon. They understood that Atlanta was an excellent model for a successful Olympics and Paralympic game. Chicago was an excellent model for a World Cup. But also throughout the United States, we've got Super Bowls, festivals, parades, things that are mega in way that federal, state, and local have come together. And so after traveling to Brazil on a number of occasions, visiting over 10 of the actual locations of the World Cup and the Olympics, meeting with the officials, we were able to demonstrate that America was not going to be a one-hit wonder in our interests, that it was going to be something that could be sustainable, and that we would try to facilitate or provide whatever resources that we could bring. So that included bringing people like the former mayor of Atlanta, Shirley Franklin, and the chairman of Fulton County's council, John Eaves, to Atlanta to talk around the experiences that the Atlanta Olympics had, and working there with civil society and also meeting with federal and state local officials. But it was not just about the economic opportunities, but also talking about the major work that is going to be taking place around social and racial inclusion. And so having individuals like that be into going into Atlanta demonstrate, I think, is one example that demonstrates the fact that America was able to provide those kinds of resources that we could then uplift and work with our ambassador, work with their ambassador, work with the different federal government. And then on the recent trip that she spoke about is that we just took 12 major professionals that represented sports and entertainment to Brazil because it was something that Brazilians are looking at in terms of the business of sports. And in that delegation, we had the senior advisor for Mark Mariel, who is now planning, has announced that he's going to take a trip to Brazil from as the president of the Urban League to really work with organizations and ministries like the Ministry of Sapir to work on justice and social inclusion. We had the president of the Arizona Cardinals, who also participated with us, Michael Bidwell, who talked a lot about the production of a Super Bowls and what that meant, not just about the game, but all of that is surrounding the game in terms of its legacy, its what it does for the economic impact, what it can do for the community. We took individuals there from the sports and entertainment community who represented major artists who could talk about what are they going to do with all these stadiums when it's all over. I will tell you that we were very fortunate that before we left the country, they have invited us back again. They've invited us back because they are looking for, meaning Brazil, at the federal, state, and local level. They're looking at where are the best practices, where are the best people that have been successful at all of these efforts. And so that's why you can see up on a picture, you have Ambassador Shannon and Ambassador Vieira. You see the North American negotiator who we work with from Itamaraty, which is their mm-hmm. State Department. We have Invest São Paulo, the president from Invest São Paulo. And then on the United States side, we have the Deputy Secretary of State, who he's planning a trip with O'Malley. We have Governor of Illinois, who just came back from Brazil and made some major announcements of in the biotech, manufacturing, mm-hmm. education. We have the presidents, I think, in the chair of Council of State Governments, who actually also continue to pledge their support around the work that we're doing because they represent all of the executive branch. And so it's the collaboration that we have to constantly be seeking to let everyone know that there is room at this table that is being set on all of these partnerships around these different types of efforts, and that this is just one pillar of partnerships that we're doing, and there's so many others that we are also supporting the State Department as it relates to Brazil.
Let me just ask one last question. In particular, I find this example of Brazil absolutely fascinating on a number of levels, but could you talk a little bit about how you bring in other government agencies, whether it's the mm-hmm. Commerce Department or AID, or how you bring in others and how you work across different agencies?
You know, President Obama said that we all are to operate in a whole of government approach. He established that really, really early on in this administration. And, you know, it's something that we have all, I believe, at the State Department taken to heart under Secretary Clinton and have brought in our different colleagues. When we launch an effort, and I'm saying specifically around what I'm doing, we look to see where are the other people who have assets that can be instrumental. We also look at trying to figure out where are the other stakeholders. Because we do not need to duplicate each other. We need to complement each other and support each other. So it is going and finding out where are the players that can participate. So if you look at commerce, of course, commerce has its foreign commercial service. So you want to engage with the people who are over there that do the Western Hemisphere, but also specifically Brazil. Mm-hmm. You want to look at the efforts and initiatives that the administration has announced, like doubling exports. So you want to work with the Select USA team. You want to work with the National Export Council. You want to work with the tourism is a number one driver for all of these economies, big job creator for not only for American states but also Brazilian states. So you want to be engaged with the U.S. Tourism Board that also comes out of commerce. So really, it's how do you bring all these stakeholders together? And so you know, it's not only bringing them together. What is everyone's interest? And making sure that the interests are aligned in what the administration is trying to do. So when we went to Brazil before this last trip, one of the issues that we wanted to focus on was Afro-Brazilian business and in business from indigenous population. So we went and asked our colleague, who actually is here today, David Henson, who heads up Minority Business Development Agency. He had an interest because from MBDA's perspective and from Commerce Department, Brazil is on that target list. So we wanted to make sure that if they had an interest, and we had gone into, meaning the State Department and some national effort team had been going into Brazil a number of times, right. we could ask if this was an opportunity for them to come along with us to specifically target state and local leaders. And so we were able to do that, and out of that visit of the work that was done by Minority Business Development out of the Department of Commerce, we met with officials over the last 3 years called SABRAE, and that is their small business association. And now Commerce Department on the MBDA and SABRAE are moving forward and have agreed on a partnership and a relationship to talk about how you specifically assist minority Afro-Brazilian entrepreneurs working with minority and women entrepreneurs here in the United States. And so, you know, we really are always listening to our partner on the federal government side for them to let us know where their targets are. The state and local leaders are not shy by no imagination. They tell you exactly what their interests, what their priorities are. And in each and every engagement in Brazil, they were always trying to talk about growing their small and medium-sized enterprises. They were always talking about racial and inclusion issues. They're always talking about issues around youth empowerment and women engagement of women and girls. And so we wanted to also make sure that whether it was our internal team at the State Department are working with our different offices like Chris Balderson from Public Private Partnership, Milan, Ambassador for Women and Girls, you know, and just a whole host of others. We wanted to always make sure that those individuals understood what we were trying to do, and if there was a role and they wanted to participate, they could from an internal side as well as from an external side from other State Department officials. But more importantly, we also needed to bring implementing partners to the table because we're just the facilitators. We're just a resource. We're the bridge. We need people who want to be interested in this to keep this moving long before, other than just being a great idea. And so that's why we were always working with our partners like Council of State Legislators, Legislators Association, our governors, our mayors, you know, our executives, our cities, because these are the organizations, and they have counterparts on the Brazilian side that can continue to keep these types of efforts going.
Well, I know we could sit here and hear so many of the stories that you have to tell, but I think it's only fair, since we've had such a great turnout, to turn the floor over to our guests here today. So we're happy to open the floor for questions. The ground rule is if you'd just tell us your name and your organization for purposes of identification. Please, the floor is open.
Yeah. Hi, thank you for organizing this conference. Jennifer Murgi, Brazil Desk. Can you speak a little bit, Special Representative Lewis, on the selection of states? The convening power of your office is very, very interesting and influential. The MOU set the mechanism, non-binding agreement, which allows the states in both Brazil and the U.S. to get together, sanctioned by both governments at the federal level. But then you start going into the trips and the missions. This is commercial diplomacy at its best. There are commercial stakes involved, and I know there are specific requests from both sides, Brazil and the U.S. And if so, if you could just go in into that a little bit. And then also, how do you measure your success? Thank you.
You know, great questions. Jennifer, thank you for being here. We work very closely with Jennifer and her team. On the Brazil desk, when she talks about the selection of states and the convening of states, one of the things that as the federal government cannot do is pick winners and losers. It's open to anyone who wants to call us and ask for assistance. And we are trying to, even with a limited team, and we can be more expansive when we bring in our bureau, our ambassadors team, other officials around the U.S. government to work on these different issues. What I basically call this is the opt-in program. You got the opt-in. It, you know, you don't opt out because it's open to anyone. But if you call us and say, I'm traveling to Brazil, I'm traveling to Russia, I'm traveling to Europe, I'm traveling wherever, we will assist you specifically in a number of areas. One, the pre-briefing. One of the things that we always try to say is that, and Secretary Clinton, I think, has done this as she has worked around bringing and calling our ambassadors, you know, our new CEOs, because under the umbrella of the embassy, that's where the whole of government actually takes place. And so 3 years ago, when we would kind of find out about a mission going to a particular state, you know, a lot of times they actually call me up because they were, like, looking for, or they called the ambassador team looking for a social event. 3 years later, it's about being strategic. It is about, as she said, commercial diplomacy. So within that embassy, you've got the Commerce Department, you've got the Department of Agriculture, you've got trade reps and just a whole host of minister counselors on e-com and political that can provide you with the kinds of information, the intelligence, and provide you with the kind of information so you strategically, from a state and local perspective, municipality perspective, make the right types of decisions. And you, meaning the leader, doesn't have to rely on any one source other than, we say, rely on your government. So, you know, we used to have this running joke with the governors. They used to say, Rita, when was the last time somebody from the State Department ever showed up and asked them to, we were going to help you. If you show up, tell them you're going to help them. Then you return and you actually help them. Then it becomes what my policy team in the building said, the department's policy team said, it's like providing a service. If you provide the service, they will return. And if they think it's valuable, they will return again. And the valuable information is that our minister counselors throughout the government have the most up-to-date information anywhere about anything in a particular country. And so it is that type of strategic information to be able to provide for a leader who is trying to travel to a state that I think either on the front end as well as when they're in country is more important. And then when you work with your commerce team or your agriculture team to help you from a commercial side, I think it continues to shore up a lot of your activities, and you don't have to kind of rely on, well, does this person have access, you know, in my government or in state and local government or in the private sector to get me these meetings, because it's really official business. It is official business when the governor and the mayor and the county executives and the legislators and all of these leaders travel to these countries on both sides. And so not only will we assist the U.S. leader, but on the Brazil side, as we have developed these mechanisms, we have said to Ambassador Vieira and to the embassy team, if you have a delegation traveling to the United States and if they would like assistance, we want to do that. We want to help facilitate that, too, because all of this, at the end of the day, is about awareness. It is really about awareness. It's about education. When 3.5 years ago, when we first started this effort and we sat down with the governors, the first on the majority of the list that we came away with, everyone was, of course, looking at China. 3 years later, it's varied. It's wide. They don't need help in some of the countries that traditionally have been their state trading partners. They are seeking assistance in these other states and localities. And so strategically, we made a decision to look at the BRIC countries. We made a strategic decision to look at emerging centers of influence. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to work through those and have looked at leaders who are going to places. For instance, one of the emerging centers of influence that I know is listed in our QDDR is Turkey. And so the governor of Georgia, led by Governor Deal, took a full complement of a delegation to Turkey. That also assisted us in pushing forward with a relationship where the United States and Turkey want to, of course, increase from, like you say, a commercial side, an economic side, more economic diplomacy. But when you travel to Turkey, you understand that they have a strategic interest of 8 U.S. states. Not that they're not looking at all the U.S. states, but they have narrowed down 8 places that they're specifically looking at. Georgia happened to have been one of them. That was a Georgia delegation. They have a consul general, an honorary general consul general in the state of Georgia. They have been to Turkey. They've been back to Turkey. It doesn't hurt that the CEO of Coca-Cola is from Turkey, but that's from Georgia. But still, it is with those kinds of efforts that you see people opting in to make decisions on where they're going. And then when she talks about measurements of success, I see measurements of success being, you know, America can have a great idea. We can talk about our American values all day long. But when we look at things that are mutually of mutual interest to countries, where they themselves say that's also important to them. And so opening up this new channel, opening up, being a bridge to from the State Department's perspective, from a federal level to state and local leaders, I think the actual signing of these agreements, these new mechanisms, is definitely one area of success that we would have from a federal government perspective, because all of you who have worked from a foreign policy perspective know how difficult it is to get any agreement signed. It's Jennifer sits over there and laugh. To get any agreement signed, to be included in what we call the deliverable by the United States or that other or the government that we're working in, to be able to have worked by going into the country, going beyond the capital, engaging non-state actors, like whether they're universities or NGOs and civil society, beyond just dealing with state and local officials, to pull these types of non-binding memorandums of understanding is definitely one area of success. But then I think the real win-win is what is in it for the constituency of which we serve, which is the state and local leaders. So if I sit down with a governor in Brazil, and before I can even get started in my discussion, and he says to me, I know exactly how you can help me. I'm trying to do X in one of your government agencies, and I just don't think they're understanding what I'm talking about. And if it just so happens that I'm going to go see those individuals when I return, and then when I do return, they actually begin to see that, you know, and tell them of what we learn while we're in Brazil, and you move forward to the point that it really became down to the documentations. It got down to just final documentations. And when the government agency really begins to understand the focus of what not only from the federal government wants to do in Brazil, but the state and local government wants to do, led by the governor, and to take an even closer look, and they make the case, and then they come out with an announcement, you know, months later, you feel like you're doing your job. And then from the U.S. perspective, if when we go to places like Brazil, and of course everybody goes to Rio, São Paulo, and Brasilia from the federal perspective, but you go and you travel to places like the Fortalezas and the Recifes and the Manauses and the Porto Alegres and the Belo Horizontes, and the CG says to you, how can I get people to come to Recife? Recife is going to be is one of the most dynamic places on the Northeast. It has everything separate from just a big stadium that and hosting of the games. And you say, you should invite the governors to come, invite the mayors to come. And then when you see a United States governor that you have met with and work with and talk to and say, governor, there's a lot going on. Talk to your private sector. There's a lot going on in areas outside of Rio and São Paulo. And then when you see the governor, say like a governor of Illinois or the mayor of Villaraigosa of Los Angeles, and they go to places like Recife and others, you know now that you are spreading that message, you're spreading that word. And then when they go there and sign agreements, you know that partnerships are beginning or there to be flourished, because they can commit the state, they can commit the city, they can commit the county. And that's really where, you know, I'm very cognizant of the fact that all of society has to work together. But when it comes to the economic might of a community, it is led by those particular leaders working in conjunction with their private sectors. And so when you see these leaders take these major corporations, take their small and medium-sized enterprises, take women-owned enterprises, and they come out with actual commercial successes, are potential partnership opportunities or university opportunities, you know that you hope that impact is taking shape.
What strikes me though is how come this has taken until 2009 from the founding of the Republic to get this office set up?
Well, first of all, you know, we've got a smart secretary, so but I think that, you know, we are all living in an age that is now allowing us to be highly connected. And so you've got so many more people at the table. So traditionally, it was just nation to nation.
Yeah.
Now, you've always had civil society.
Sure.
And thank God for civil society, because that has been the backbone and the pillar of all of the work that any of us have done. But to really see now that technology allows us to be in communication. I think that, you know, Secretary Clinton being one of the few elected officials that's been Secretary of State understood that very aggressively early on about new partnerships. Having a State Department and administration wanting to be more inclusive, more engaged. So I think that at this juncture, it's not that it wasn't happening at the State Department, but it was happening at a, as he would say, you know, as Stephen was talking about, ad hoc or at a level that was not, the spotlight wasn't shined on. And then we have also been just very, very aggressive, in all of the countries that we have gotten these agreements. And so being able to get agreements in Brazil and Russia and India and China and working in Nigeria and South Africa just says that we are trying to embody the charge that we've been given by the administration and the secretary.
I see a few hands up, and I'd like to, for sake of time, take a few questions and then let our guest sort of sum up and respond to those. There's a young woman. We have a microphone for you.
Morning. My name is Tatiana Teixeira. I'm a PhD student from State University of Rio de Janeiro. Thank you, CSIS, for this event. It's a huge opportunity for me to be here. First, I understand that State Department is now seeking new channels to engage with countries like Brazil that are not a hot issue, a hot security issue in U.S. agenda, foreign policy agenda. But in terms of Brazil, we still talk a lot about a mutual misunderstanding and always a new beginning between U.S. and Brazil relations and the need of a more tangible partnership. So is there a broader U.S. Foreign policy towards Brazil? And do U.S. think about BRICS as a group, or it is still a more bilateral relation with each country? And last question, I promise. Are American think tanks important for this debate? Are they critical? Are they influential? Are they really engaging in the debate of U.S.-Brazil relations? Thank you.
I'll take your last question first. First of all, being here at CSIS is an honor and also a privilege. I know that CSIS has hosted numerous officials from the State Department, including Secretary of State, over the years. And so the reason why we all are excited about being in organizations like this is because where you have this critical thinking that push forwards new ideas, but then to also help us work to shape and craft how these efforts need to also be going forward, and then how you can look at these efforts from an overall perspective. And so it's important for us to always be engaging with these kinds of organizations and think tanks of all types. And I think one of the things that Secretary Clinton has been really good about is that, you know, it's not only the traditional, but it's also the non-traditional, or those that have not had that opportunity. And that's why you see so many efforts that take place at the State Department, fact of how they are embraced, how so many different organizations and universities have been embraced when we are doing efforts around, especially around education and around our overall foreign policy, of which, you know, when you say from the BRICS perspective, I'm going to leave that discussion of where that is to those who mastermind the BRICS. But I will tell you that when President Obama went last year and President Rousseff came this year, We continue to see that as indicative of the relationship that both of our countries have, as well as not just from a trading partner perspective, but from an overall global perspective of two countries' interest and desire to host all types of dialogues. And that's why you've seen over the last several years a number of new initiatives, a number of new dialogues have sprung up that have gone far beyond the traditional things that we have all been engaged in. And I think that you will continue to see those types of dialogues and looking for new ways and new mechanisms in order to engage not only Brazil from a country perspective, but also the Brazilian people.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yes, sir?
Emilio Ortiz with the State Department. Ma'am, as you were speaking, it became clear that one of the structures that develops future leaders in each country is our governors and mayors as they rise through the ranks. And I was wondering, how critical do you think it will be for the United States and the State Department to develop a formal structure to foster these relationships in the future and in the 21st century?
Critical. We think the formal structures are really developed through the organizations themselves. You know, when you talk about governors, mayors, county executives, legislators, councils, you know, cities, whatever, they themselves have major best practices institutes. And we try to support those best practices institutes because they've been training local elected officials for decades. And so it's not something that the State Department needs to enter into that picture. It's something that's been going on for years by, whether it's by universities, whether it's by think tanks, whether it's by, you know, organizations that kind of train those leaders. But it is something that we can definitely support.
Yes, sir. Can you use your mic, please?
Daniel Friedman from the State Department's Bureau of Conflict and Stabilization Operations. It's one issue of interest to us, but I was wondering, in discussions, especially when you're talking about large events or just in general fostering economic development, the extent to which discussions come up around security, ideas about policing, if those are ever exchanged, and how those discussions tend to go.
He has asked one of the most critical questions. You know, in our system, when we have major sporting events, they can get a designation around national security. If they don't get the designation, they still, and I would think this has pretty much happened, as the diplomatic security team has told me since the Atlanta Olympics, that our federal, state, and local security teams work together in an unprecedented way that has really been a model for countries around the world. We have worked very closely with our RSO and our regional security officer in Brazil, where Paul has, over the last several years, had the leadership role in working around security issues around major sporting, this particular major sporting events that's going to take place in Brazil for the last several years, around training and capacity building opportunities. One of the central themes that we heard in our repeated engagements of traveling through the different states and cities in Brazil was around intergovernmental and the work that has to take place between the federal, state, and local, especially around security. And Brazil has a system where the state, you have to ask for, you know, additional assistance and resources and whatever. But more importantly, what we have seen is that one of the areas that American law enforcement and emergency preparedness and disaster specialists could be of assistance is in the security area. And so in the last delegation that we just came back from Brazil, our regional security officer and our diplomatic security team, who is heading major sporting events, was participating with us. Because at the Super Bowl, going to your except about another practical example, at this year's Super Bowl, not only has Paul been working with the federal level for the last several years, but he also has brought in more on the federal and state level, because that had been a direct request from the officials of making sure that not only do we do IVLP, International Visitors Programs, for just the chief, but to really go deeper in the training of those who have to implement the security measures at all types of levels. And so the United States, our diplomatic security team, which works on major sporting events, of course, their first priority is securing Americans, American athletes, American business, you know, American citizens. But the most important thing is it has been requested, just as they have requested support and advice from other countries. But they have requested, and we have an activity coming up during the Super Bowl that is going to be in New Orleans that will include not only federal officials from Brazil, but also state and local officials on the security side are going to also be participating. The reason why that also is unique is because Mayor Landrieu, who is the mayor of New Orleans, has also pledged that he would be bring his state and local officials to that same type of best practices sessions and exchanging of ideas with the Brazilians also at that time, and then to also ask other mayors post-Super Bowl to also participate. We were also fortunate that the chairman of the NFL's security team was with us, who is the president of the Cardinals, and he too then also discussed with the diplomatic security team of the State Department that working in conjunction with our federal officials, that they too would want to lend whatever best practices experiences that they would have to the Brazilians at that time. So security, of course, is whether it's in the United States for an Atlanta Olympics or Chicago World Cup or, you know, wherever big sporting events are in the United States, in Brazil, security is definitely on the minds of everyone. And we are very delighted that from a mutual sharing of best practices and good practices that our global teams who do this kind of work has been supportive about developing sessions around that. And also one of the first engagements that we had was Rio City and State also several years ago came to look at a whole host of how things were done at the federal level. So it's been an ongoing conversation, and we think it will probably be one throughout the entire time of the planning for the Olympics and the World Cup.
There's one quick question from Jeff Marbrook Goodman, and I just want to give you the opportunity to ask it before we close.
Well, maybe it's appropriate. The last question is about funding. This is such important work. I'm now general counsel of an NGO here in Washington, and before I was in the administration. And while I'm a lawyer, I'm also my area of interest of in development is governance. And I always like to say governance is the poor sister to democracy, and the democracy and governance sphere, and both of them together, the poor sister of everything else in our development programs. So I don't expect your answer to be, you know, to be a good one based on the current what this country is facing funding-wise. But you know, it comes down to governance, the local organizations, institutions this country helping more local institutions in the other countries, whether it's in, and I always like to go through the litany, whether it's in procurement or financial management, security, bolstering civil rights protections, you know, all the whole gamut. And it goes to sexy things like elections too. But I don't expect that your answers, and the things that the government is doing can do by itself, and your convening power is hugely important. Do you see there's some wonderful grants that the State Department does in this area? MEPI, CSO does an incredible work in transitions that involves governance bolstering. Do you see any future for implementers to be assisting in this space at all?
Absolutely. And what I say, when we travel throughout these different places around the world, one of the, being a former Chamber of Commerce executive, I always engage with the private sector. And so that means that I'm always engaging with the American Chamber of Commerce. I'm engaging with the business councils that focus not only U.S., but also the country. So dealing with, you know, Brazilian industry associations, and we met with a number of officials each and every time that we have gone to these particular countries. We, you know, like in India, we're always dealing with like the CIIs, which is the Confederation of Industries, or the FICCIs, their Federation of Industries, because we think there's equities in it for everybody, not just American companies, but also the countries, the host countries, has so many equities. The private sector has numerous initiatives on corporate social responsibility. And as they look to look at their types of activities in a particular country, they too, or we know, are always looking to be a good corporate citizen. And so one of the things that we try to do when we go into, whether it's in Brazil, we were just at the American Chamber in São Paulo, or dealing in AmCham in Russia or whatever, we say to them that you should look at how you conduct your business in the United States is the same way you're going to conduct your business as a good corporate citizen in another country. And the leaders in those countries, just as any state and local leader here in the United States, they too are always looking for a good practice or a best practice. They too are looking for solutions. They are looking to solve a problem. And it is not always about coming to sell them something. It is about the fact that if you have the best technology or you have the best data, the best research, the best whatever, it is how understanding mutually about their interests to solving that problem to deliver a better service for the community of which they serve can also be a level and a way of engagement that I think is a different conversation than what normally and traditionally that we have seen. And, you know, if you're engaged in the capital city, but you have plants, manufacturing, services, or whatever throughout the entire country, you can't just engage in the capital city. You've got to go to Tianjin, which is 30 minutes by the, you know, what is it, the speed, the rapid, what is it, the what, that thing I was on? High-speed rail, which gets you there in 30 minutes outside of Beijing, which is 13.5 million people. So you can't just stay in Beijing and Shanghai. You got to go out to Tianjin. You got to go out to all these, you know, these Hunans and you in all these other provinces. They have issues. They have problems. They have concerns. And one of the biggest issues that everybody is always talking about, and we're all talking about this, is this greening of the economy and how to be more sustainable and how to have efforts that look at the community as a whole. Not just in the one thing that you're trying to do in the state or locality, but from a sustainability perspective, all of these leaders are looking for people to bring them the best idea. What I always say, I'm from America, so we got the best idea. Mm-hmm. I'm going to always be pushing that we got the best idea. And they're constantly saying, Americans are not there. Americans, where are we? So as we have all these efforts that Ambassador Locke and others in China support and our other ambassadors around the world talking about American businesses, we also have to we're also discussing about the fact that mutually there are a lot of efforts that we can do together that are the province of the business community. They have them. They know how to impart them. Well, we don't have to tell them how to do that. And so when you come into a community and you see the fact that, you know, small business, large business, woman-owned business, it doesn't really matter which size, it's actually doing work about how to improve the lives of the community that goes way beyond just strengthening a bilateral, a commercial tie. It really goes a long way with these leaders. And they are looking for it. They are hungry for it. And as we say at the State Department, I believe America has some of the best that there is. And it is about us offering it to them and being a partner, being a collaborator, being a someone who is not there just in our own interest. And so all of these efforts that we have done around the world, whether it's in Brazil, Russia, India, China, Turkey, you name it, it really goes to the heart and core of our bilateral relationship. And so this pillar is about how we continue to take these mechanisms, take these the resources, limited as they may be, that we have, and really use them to strengthen and deepen our overall bilateral relationship at the state and local level, and to applaud and support the work that these state and local level officials are doing, not only in the United States, but also abroad.
Special Representative Lewis, thank you so much for being here with us today, sharing your portfolio, and I think you've got us all spun up as we go out the door. To all of you that came this morning, please take an opportunity to come up and meet her and exchange business cards so that you can do your part as ambassadors for the United States and for your own localities. Thank you so much.
Thank you.